This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents The Candida Cure, the 90-day program to balance your gut, beat Candida, and restore vibrant health. By Anne Baroque, CNC, with a foreword by David Perlmutter, MD. Read by Donna Postel. This digital audiobook comes with a free PDF enhancement that contains charts, lists, recipes, and resources mentioned in the book. Please download this PDF for free from the vendor you received your audiobook from. Forward. At every crossway on the road that leads to the future, each progressive spirit is opposed by 1,000 men appointed to guard the past. Maurice Maeterlinck, Belgian Nobel laureate. Despite Candida albicans's 30-year history as a well-defined and well-described clinical entity, the concept that a diverse range of seemingly disparate symptoms could be attributed to systemic overgrowth of this yeast species remains foreign to most medical practitioners. The unfortunate consequence of this naivete is that countless sufferers of this malady know nothing about the medical and lifestyle interventions that can pave the way to their recovery. The relative obscurity of this disease in mainstream medicine is not the only problem. Many of the time-honored practices of today's healthcare paradigm, including the excessive use of antibiotics and steroid medications, as well as the neglect of such simple practices as the use of probiotic beneficial bacteria, are actually setting the stage for the development of systemic candidiasis. As a result, those of us who deal with this health condition in the clinical setting are witnessing what now seems almost epidemic. In her groundbreaking self-published book, The Candida Cure, Anne Baroque offered readers a comprehensive understanding of this disease and its relevance to our health. Anne's first-hand personal experience, coupled with extensive and exhaustive research, resulted in a text that will surely stand as a fundamental resource in the emerging story of Candida as the hidden cause of many illnesses. Unfortunately, Anne passed away before she could see this updated and revised volume of her work published and distributed. But she did complete the revised manuscript before her death, and we know that she saw it as her mission to ensure that this information made it to those who are desperately in need of healing. The Candida Cure deftly weaves together a compelling text describing the magnitude of the problem, its causes, and its cures, offering hope to those whose lives have been affected by this chronic condition. For it is hope that is drained from the countless undiagnosed and inappropriately treated Candida patients who stumble helplessly from doctor to doctor. And it is hope restored that is the highest merit of this book. That is Anne's legacy to us all. David Perlmutter, M.D., FACN, ABIHM. Introduction. When I was 24 years old, life as I knew it came to a screeching halt when my nervous system went completely haywire. For 6 to 8 months, I faced inexplicable daily episodes where I'd lose control over my motor skills, and my body would spasm and tremor uncontrollably. I experienced numbness and tingling in my limbs, muscle weakness, impaired sensory perception, bladder dysfunction, and nervous exhaustion. I wasn't able to talk, chew, or swallow in any normal way. I also had trouble formulating thoughts and accessing my memory. After a neurological exam, an EEG to measure electrical activity in my brain, and evoked potential testing to determine how my nerves responded to certain stimuli, my internist announced his unsettling diagnosis. "Well, the great news is that you don't have cancer," he said. "The bad news is that you have multiple sclerosis." After that, everything became a blur as the words "incurable" and "deterioration" echoed through my head. Sick to my stomach, terrified and shocked, I looked at my poor mother, who was completely offended by the doctor's abrupt and insensitive manner. Together, we staggered out of the office. When my doctor suggested chemo as a first step, everything inside me screamed that I needed to find an alternative route to conquering this so-called incurable disease. This was 1989, so there was no Google, and there wasn't much information out there about unconventional ways to deal with, much less recover from, MS. I had, however, faced candida issues when I was around 18 years old, while battling mono, so I'd been initiated into the world of holistic diet, health, and candida overload to a certain extent. I knew that Candida albicans is a harmless yeast, a type of fungus that lives naturally in everyone, men, women, and kids alike. In a healthy body, Candida lives symbiotically in a balanced environment, in the gastrointestinal tract, on the mucous membranes, and on the skin. Unfortunately, however, this harmless yeast can overgrow and turn into an opportunistic pathogen. I believed Candida was the primary culprit in what was happening to me. Research validated my suspicions. I learned that yeast candida overgrowth and fungal toxins are a major factor in all autoimmune diseases, including, but certainly not limited to, MS. An autoimmune condition is one in which the immune system works overtime to defend itself against one or more rogue pathogens, so much so that it aggressively attacks the body's own cells. Think of it as friendly fire gone awry. To calm down my immune system and remove the burden that a candida overgrowth creates, I turned to Dr. C. Orion Truss and Dr. William G. Crook's landmark books on the topic, which drew profound correlations between autoimmune disease and yeast. I also dug into Judy Graham's multiple sclerosis for guidance. I put myself on a strict anti-candida diet, took an antifungal remedy and broader antimicrobial solution called Candida Cleanse by Rainbow Light, replaced 15 silver amalgam fillings in my mouth. I nearly died in the process, as I'd temporarily become even more symptomatic after removing a quadrant of fillings, and used nutritional supplements to heal my immune system. I also worked through emotional and mental layers of fear-based patterns, because I truly believe that what you think about, you bring about, and that negative belief systems and patterns can affect cellular memory. With time and tenacity, my body began to heal. The daily immune system attacks became less aggressive after 6 to 8 months, and bladder and cognitive issues improved after the first year. Fatigue came and went. Numbness and tingling and impaired sensory perceptions lasted the longest. I'll be honest, it wasn't necessarily a smooth upward trajectory. Central nervous system diseases rarely are. The central nervous system controls everything in the body, so it reacts to the external environment each day, along with having to tackle an existing condition. Stress and fear also play a big part in how Candida affects the immune system and adrenals. The incredible news is that I found that most symptoms that seemed to be new or fleeting were just part of a healing crisis. And knowing this, I could push through the discomfort with hope and optimism. As time went on, I became more confident about how to ride the waves and trust my body's ability to eventually right itself. After 4 tumultuous years of struggling with MS, I finally triumphed over the disease at the age of 28. I put my debilitating condition into remission for good. And in the 24 years that have passed since then, I'm thrilled to say that I have enjoyed robust health and have not experienced any signs or symptoms of MS since. Heal Candida. Heal yourself. My journey made it feel clear that I now had a greater purpose, to help as many other people heal the way I did. And the best way I could think to do this was to write a book. Back in 2009, however, there wasn't a publisher around who was interested in putting out a book on Candida. So once again, I took this on myself, by self-publishing my protocol and diet plan for ridding the body of Candida overgrowth. The book became an amazing bestseller, and I received letters and emails from some of the nearly 70,000 readers who followed my protocol and experienced incredible results. Most had stumbled upon the Candida cure by Googling their symptoms and having a eureka moment right there on the Amazon page. Far too many people were tired of feeling lousy and not getting answers, and desperate for advice. My book was just the antidote they needed. Over the years, I've heard from countless readers and clients who put their autoimmune diseases into remission the way I did, but also from those who've found relief from seemingly random and vague symptoms such as overwhelming fatigue, bloating, acid reflux, eczema, weight gain, sinus infections, and depression, all by curing their Candida overgrowth. And while there are plenty of through lines, every Candida picture looks a little different. Some sufferers will be taken down after an infection that doesn't go away, when several courses of antibiotics tip the scales. Others have a poor diet, experience high levels of stress, or might be on birth control for several years. And over time, Candida overgrowth becomes an issue. In all cases, however, clearing infection and inflammation allows the immune system to heal the body, removing whatever burden is taking its toll. My book's success also showed me that those in need of helpful healing information went beyond the Candida community. The patients and practitioners who are aware of and believe in the pervasive negative effects of yeast overgrowth. And after being in private practice for 20 years as a nutritional consultant and naturopath, I can confidently tell you that the Candida problem is pandemic. It's so much bigger than I could have ever imagined. Antibiotics, steroids, stress, sugar, heavy metals, alcohol, poor diet, and birth control pills pervade our lifestyles and healthcare, and all are underlying causes for overgrowth. The good news is that my program has helped thousands of clients with all types of conditions to resolve their allergies, autoimmune diseases, endocrine imbalances, gastrointestinal disorders, depression, anxiety, and more. And it can help you, too. I believe that most health conditions that are not congenital will benefit by resolving Candida overgrowth. And while I wouldn't go so far as to say that Candida is the cause of every disease out there, it is commonly a very big piece of the puzzle. When you have yeast overgrowth, it lays the groundwork for pathogens to flourish and opportunistic microbial infections to take hold. Viruses come out of dormancy, parasites make themselves at home, and bad bacteria proliferate. In the process of purging the body of harmful Candida overgrowth with a thoughtful diet and antimicrobials, you remove various types of infection and inflammation from it. This either eliminates most, if not all, of the symptoms, provides a clearer picture of what remains out of balance in the body, or both. My Candida program is such a success because it helps clean up the immune system and balances the gut microbiome, where most health conditions begin, and Candida problems are known to thrive. Do you have a Candida overgrowth? If you've bought this book, you likely either suspect you have a Candida issue, or have been told by a practitioner that you do. Or maybe you've simply heard about Candida and the microbiome, and thought your symptoms lined up with that of an overgrowth. The following questionnaire, developed by William G. Crook, M.D., is one that I like to use in my practice to assess whether Candida overgrowth is contributing to a client's health problems. That being said, know, too, that it won't provide you with a black-and-white yes-or-no answer. That's because it's challenging to diagnose Candida overgrowth, even in laboratory tests. This is one reason Candida is often dismissed or downplayed within the diagnostic protocols of the traditional medical establishment. The truth of the matter is, even if your score says that yeast-related health problems are possibly present, it's likely that you have some degree of overgrowth that warrants attention. The test will also give you an idea of how certain medications and habits lead to yeast overgrowth. Frankly, I believe that everyone living in today's world can benefit from doing a 90-day program to heal the gut and remove toxins and inflammation from the body, as my Candida program does. It will also give you more energy and mental clarity, improve your mood, and help you lose weight, no matter where you fall on the Candida spectrum. To take the quiz, available in print on the PDF enhancement, you want to pay the most attention to your yes answers. Each time you circle one in Section A, you'll then circle the point score next to the question. When you finish the section, total your score, and then move on to Sections B and C, and then total those scores at the end of each section. At the end of the questionnaire, add together your scores for all three sections to figure out your grand total. Section A, Health History. 1. Have you taken any tetracyclines, Sumicin, panmycin, vibramycin, minocin, and so on, or other antibiotics for acne for 1 month or longer? 50 points. 2. Have you at any time in your life taken other broad-spectrum antibiotics for respiratory, urinary, or other infections for 2 months or longer, or for shorter periods, 4 or more times in a 1 year span? 50 points. 3. Have you taken an antibiotic drug, even for 1 round? 6 points. 4. Have you at any time in your life been bothered by persistent prostatitis, vaginitis, or other problems affecting your reproductive organs? 25 points. 5. Have you been pregnant 2 or more times? 5 points. 1 time? 3 points. 6. Have you taken birth control pills for more than 2 years? 15 points. For 6 months to 2 years? 8 points. 7. Have you taken prednisone, Decadron, or other cortisone-type drugs by mouth or inhalation for more than 2 weeks? 15 points. For 2 weeks or less? 6 points. 8. Does exposure to perfumes, insecticides, fabric shop odors, or other chemicals provoke moderate to severe symptoms? 20 points. Mild symptoms? 5 points. 9. Are your symptoms worse on damp, muggy days or in moldy places? 20 points. 10. Have you had athlete's foot, ringworm, jock itch, or other chronic fungus infections of the skin or nails? Have such infections been severe or persistent? 20 points. Mild to moderate? 10 points. 11. Do you crave sugar? 10 points. 12. Do you crave breads? 10 points. 13. Do you crave alcoholic beverages? 10 points. 14. Does tobacco smoke really bother you? 10 points. Total score, Section A. Section B. What are your symptoms? For each symptom you experience, enter the appropriate number in the point score column. Occasional or mild equals 3 points. Frequent and or moderately severe equals 6 points. Severe and or disabling equals 9 points. Total the score and record it at the end of this section. 1. Fatigue or lethargy. 2. Feeling drained. 3. Poor memory. 4. Feeling spacey or unreal. 5. Inability to make decisions. 6. Numbness, burning, or tingling. 7. Insomnia. 8. Muscle aches. 9. Muscle weakness or paralysis. 10. Pain and or swelling in joints. 11. Abdominal pain. 12. Constipation. 13. Diarrhea. 14. bloating, belching, or intestinal gas. 15. Troublesome vaginal burning, itching, or discharge. 16. Prostatitis. 17. Impotence. 18. Loss of sexual desire or feeling. 19. Endometriosis or infertility. 20. Cramps and or other menstrual irregularities. 21. Premenstrual tension. 22. Attacks of anxiety or crying. 23. Cold hands or feet and or chilliness. 24. Shaking or irritability when hungry. Total score, Section B. Section C, related symptoms. Although the symptoms in this section occur commonly in patients with yeast-connected illness, they also occur commonly in patients who do not have candida. For each symptom you experience, enter the appropriate number in the point score column. Occasional or mild equals 3 points. Frequent and or moderately severe equals 6 points. Severe and or disabling equals 9 points. Total the score and record it at the end of this section. 1. Drowsiness. 2. Irritability or jitteriness. 3. Lack of coordination. 4. Inability to concentrate. 5. Frequent mood swings. 6. Headaches. 7. Dizziness and or loss of balance. 8. Pressure above ears or feeling of head swelling. 9. Tendency to bruise easily. 10. Chronic rashes or itching. 11. Psoriasis or recurrent hives. 12. Indigestion or heartburn. 13. Food sensitivities or intolerances. 14. Mucus in stools. 15. Rectal itching. 16. Dry mouth or throat. 17. Rash or blisters in mouth. 18. Bad breath. 19. Foot, hair, or body odor not relieved by washing. 20. Nasal congestion or postnasal drip. 21. Nasal itching. 22. Sore throat. 23. Laryngitis or loss of voice. 24. Cough or recurrent bronchitis. 25. Pain or tightness in chest. 26. Wheezing or shortness of breath. 27. Urinary frequency, urgency, or incontinence. 28. Burning on urination. 29. Erratic vision or spots in front of eyes. 30. Burning or tearing of eyes. 31. Recurrent infections or fluid in ears. 32. Ear pain or deafness. Total score, Section C. Total score, Section B. Total score, Section A. Grand total score. Add totals from Sections A, B, and C. Your grand total score will help you and your practitioner decide if your health problems are yeast connected. Note that scores for women will run higher than for men, because 7 items apply exclusively to women, while only 2 apply exclusively to men. Results. For women, if you scored 180 or more, yeast-related health problems are almost certainly present. If you scored 120 or more, yeast-related health problems are probably present. If you scored 60 or more, yeast-related health problems are possibly present. If you scored less than 60, it's unlikely that yeast is causing health problems. For men, if you scored 140 or more, yeast-related health problems are almost certainly present. If you scored 90 or more, yeast-related health problems are probably present. If you scored 40 or more, yeast-related health problems are possibly present. If you scored less than 40, it's unlikely that yeast is causing health problems. Adapted from William G. Crook, M.D., The Yeast Connection Handbook. How to use this book. It's been 7 years since I originally published The Candida Cure, and a lot has changed. Enter this updated edition, which includes the latest science not only on Candida, but also on gut health and its relationship to what we call the microbiome, aka the fungal community within our bodies. I will also share what I've come to learn about the self-healing mechanisms of our immune system, Candida's relationship to small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, SIBO, optimal adrenal functioning, and the devastating effects of sugar and processed foods on the nervous system. All these factors play an essential role in bringing your body back to its healthiest state. In the first half of the book, you will learn what Candida is, why most health imbalances begin in the gastrointestinal tract, where Candida wreaks the most havoc, and how your body's natural defense systems can be your best ally against Candida and other causes of illness. In the second half, we will focus on using nutrition as a means of healing. What's more, I'll show you how to create your own 90-day program to achieve a vibrant level of health with the help of user-friendly charts and supplement protocols, a 2-week sample menu plan, and delicious recipes. To completely beat Candida, you need to implement both the anti-Candida diet along with an antifungal and additional supplementation to support detoxification and restore optimal functioning of the body. I'll share reader and client success stories about those who've conquered sugar and carb addictions that fed their Candida problems, plus their tips for overcoming the flu-like symptoms that can appear as you begin to detoxify your body and the Candida dies off. Though these symptoms are normal and transitory, this virulent fungus puts up quite a fight. My hope for you is that after a month, your symptoms will begin to subside, and by 90 days, you'll feel fantastic. My program is not about deprivation, but about a lifestyle change that will help you not only regain health, but also age with quality. And as blood sugar levels normalize and overgrowth is tackled, even your sugar and carb cravings will disappear. Don't worry if you have a bad day and fall off the wagon. Just get back on the next. You don't have to be a perfectionist, but you do have to commit to reap the benefits. Thousands have done my program, and so can you. I've designed every step to make swift and positive changes happen. Let's get started. Part 1. The Hidden Factor in Many Illnesses. 1. The Candida Epidemic. Many of the illnesses and symptoms that plague men, women, and even children today, from fatigue, bloating, and weight gain, to prostatitis, brain fog, arthritis, allergies, ear infections, and depression, can be traced back to a surprising factor, an overgrowth of yeast called Candida albicans. This fungus is meant to harmlessly and naturally live in our bodies, and when you're in good health, it exists symbiotically with other bacteria in the gastrointestinal tract, on the mucous membranes, and on your skin. But when your gut is out of balance, Candida can overproduce, and the result turns an otherwise harmless microbe into an aggressive and opportunistic pathogen that systematically wreaks havoc throughout your body. Think of Candida as the heat from your kitchen stove. Most of the time you appreciate it because it gives you exactly what you need, say, hot soup on a cold winter's night. But if you let it get out of hand, its flames will catch the drapes on fire. Could your illness be caused by Candida? Yeast overgrowth, which most practitioners refer to as Candida or candidiasis, is a pandemic concern that affects millions of people around the world. More than 150 species of Candida have been identified, with 6 being the most commonly found in humans. Conservatively speaking, 1 in 3 people suffer from yeast-related symptoms or conditions. It's always funny to me that in my practice, women seem to associate Candida with vaginal yeast infections, and men relate the word fungus to an issue with their toenails. The truth is, both assumptions are sadly naive. Candida can affect many other body parts than what are typically known. In addition to the common everyday concerns I mentioned earlier, Candida has also been linked to arguably more serious and debilitating illnesses, such as autoimmune diseases like multiple sclerosis, fibromyalgia, autism, and mental illness. In every case, however, Western medicine has failed to cite most of the pathogens that cause the body and immune system to go haywire, and I believe fungi are often the culprit, if not part of a larger microbial concern. This is why patients who see me for serious conditions that are often considered mystery illnesses or incurable diseases by doctors not only overcome them on my program, but also find that other seemingly minor and intermittent health annoyances disappear because they, too, were caused or fed by Candida. These include sinus problems, tinnitus, upper respiratory infections, PMS, eczema, fatigue, brain fog, fibroids, acne, heartburn or gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD, prostatitis, and anxiety. All can be part of a larger and more complicated fungal infection that is far too easy to shrug off, lather with creams, and dull with ibuprofen until it culminates in a larger and more unwieldy problem. Left unchecked, Candida continues to multiply. And over time, yeast, which is a single-celled organism, will change form to become a full-blown pathogenic fungus that is capable of causing disease. When Candida turns pathogenic, and thus systemic, it shifts into a highly aggressive and invasive form called mycelial Candida, sprouting whiskery, food-seeking roots that extend themselves throughout your gut, much like a plant's roots. Candida's roots then puncture the gut and firmly anchor themselves into the intestinal lining of your gastrointestinal tract, causing the intestinal barrier to become more permeable. This is one of the many causes of a condition called leaky gut syndrome, leaky gut for short, which we'll discuss in more detail in Chapter 2, The Origin of Disease. And it's exacerbated by an increasingly upset balance of microorganisms in your intestinal lining. When the wall that separates your gastrointestinal tract from your bloodstream becomes permeable, the fungus and its toxic byproducts can seep through the intestinal lining into your body's circulating blood, where they do not belong. The Microbiome 101. So much about whether we sustain or disrupt good health is dependent on the body's microbiome, a term coined in 2001 by Nobel Prize-winning geneticist and microbiologist Joshua Lederberg to describe the approximately 100 trillion microorganisms or microbes that exist within the human body. Your microbiome is composed of the bacteria, viruses, and single-celled microorganisms, such as algae, protozoa, and fungi that reside in and on our bodies. All have a tremendous potential to impact our physiology. They contribute to metabolic functions, protect against pathogens, and support the immune system. And consequently, either directly or indirectly, they affect most of our body's functions. Without a doubt, these organisms are essential to life-sustaining processes, such as digestion, immunity, and the production and assimilation of vitamins. The microbiome, however, refers specifically to the fungal population in your body within the microbiome. And if you've never heard of it, you're not alone. As researchers at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine point out, the microbiome is an understudied ecosystem, despite the fact that it plays a pivotal role in our health. Diverse microbiome patterns are associated with various diseases. By interfacing with other biomes, as well as with the host, the microbiome probably contributes to the progression of fungus-associated diseases and plays an important role in health. Biome, a naturally occurring community of flora and fauna. Microbiome, all your gut inhabitants. Mycobiome, just the fungi. Biome host, you. While research is being increasingly dedicated to the study of the microbiome, this delicate ecosystem is still understudied in comparison to the microbiome, which I find a bit frustrating, because so many patients could potentially regain their health and vitality if it were more widely recognized, studied, and addressed clinically. Dr. Mahmoud Ghanoum, director of the Center for Medical Mycology at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, echoed my concerns when he wrote, "The scientific community has not heeded our advice with regard to the fungal components of the microbiome. As of November 2015, only 269 of more than 6,000 Web of Science searches for the microbiome even mention fungus. And the scientific search engine returns only 55 papers pertaining to the microbiome. However, after 20 years of finding little or no scientific data on this topic, I am beginning to feel more optimistic. New research acknowledges the fungal microbiome as a critical player in health and disease. When the microbiome and mycobiome in your gut are out of balance, a condition otherwise known as dysbiosis, Candida isn't the only organism that multiplies. Populations of other microorganisms explode as well. Today, clinicians like me are especially witnessing marked increases in two manifestations of this imbalance: small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, SIBO, and Helicobacter pylori. Often, these proliferate in tandem with Candida overgrowth because of the gut's dysbiosis. SIBO and H. pylori then can open the door for Candida, and vice versa. Low stomach acid can also promote SIBO and Candida, and hydrogen produced by bacteria can be an energy source for H. pylori. And if antibiotics are given for SIBO and H. pylori treatment, even when they are necessary in some cases, this too will promote Candida growth. Even so, Candida is still ignored by most doctors. When a patient sees me for any of these infections, however, I like to use a broad-spectrum antimicrobial remedy that addresses all kinds of infections at once. It's important to be thorough here. Let's take a closer look at these two treatable conditions, in case your Candida has set the stage for them. SIBO is an illness in which bacteria, typically found in the large intestine, begin to multiply within the small intestine. This can happen due to a variety of reasons, including too low gastric acid and motility disorders that don't allow waste to move through the GI tract due to a lack of water or fiber, too much sugar, a fistula, an impaired ileocecal valve, adhesions, gas, medications, structural abnormalities, or neurological and muscular conditions that slow down the transport of bacteria and food, which then sit in the intestine for too long. It can also be caused by immune system dysfunction. An increased incidence of SIBO has also been linked to increased use of medications for GI disorders known as proton pump inhibitors, like Nexium, Prevacid, and Prilosec. Symptoms of SIBO include gas, bloating, abdominal pain, nausea, constipation, and diarrhea, with less obvious signs that include an inability to absorb certain vitamins like B12, chronically low ferritin levels, which signal low iron stores, acid reflux, and/or laryngopharyngeal reflux, LPR, or silent reflux, and inadequate pancreatic enzymes. As for H. pylori, this is a bacterial infection that can cause ulcers in the stomach and small intestine for some, creating mild symptoms like bloating, belching, nausea, and abdominal discomfort, even though in others, the bacteria can remain in the body an entire lifetime without causing harm. H. pylori enters your body through food, water, or saliva contaminated by an infected person. And once inside, it destroys the protective lining of your stomach and intestines. Your body's digestive acids can then cause ulcers. The following list of conditions exacerbated by fungal overgrowth is also available for reference on the PDF enhancement. Autoimmune diseases, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, HIV/AIDS, Hodgkin's disease, leukemia, lupus, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, myasthenia gravis, rheumatoid arthritis, sarcoidosis, scleroderma. Blood system, chronic infections, iron deficiency, thrombocytopenic purpura. Cancer. Cardiovascular. Endocarditis, pericarditis, mitral valve prolapse, valve problems. Digestive system. Anorexia nervosa. Bloating or gas. Carbohydrate or sugar cravings. Colitis. Constipation or diarrhea. Crohn's disease. Dysbiosis. Food allergies. Gastritis. Heartburn. Intestinal pain. Irritable bowel syndrome. Leaky gut. Malabsorption or maldigestion. Skin. Acne. Diaper rash. Dry skin and itching. Eczema, hives, hair loss, leprosy, liver spots, psoriasis. Respiratory system, ears, eyes, mouth, asthma, bronchitis, dizziness, earaches, environmental allergies or chemical sensitivities, hay fever, oral thrush, sinusitis. Endocrine system, adrenal or thyroid failure, diabetes, hormonal imbalances, hypoglycemia, insomnia, over or underweight. Nervous system, alcoholism, anxiety, attention deficit disorder, autism, brain fog, depression, headaches, hyperactivity, hyperirritability, learning difficulties, manic depressive disorder, memory loss, migraines, schizophrenia, suicidal tendencies. Urinary and reproductive. Cystitis, endometriosis, fibroids, impotence, loss of libido, menstrual irregularities, PMS, prostatitis, sexually transmitted diseases, urethritis, yeast vaginal infections. Virus, Epstein-Barr virus. Where did all this candida come from? So how can your yeast balance become so unwieldy and out of control? The real question is, in today's society, how can it not? Remember, yeast overgrowth often occurs as a direct result of microbial imbalances in the gut. So when the bacteria that make up its protective microbiome's terrain are wiped out, yeast flourishes and overproduces. This can happen due to the use of antibiotics, steroids, birth control pills, and estrogen replacement therapy, as well as the effects of heavy metals, diets high in refined sugars and carbohydrates, dairy products, alcohol, and processed foods also create the ideal conditions in your digestive tract for yeast to thrive. Add in chronic stress, which elevates cortisol, a hormone produced by the adrenal glands, which are responsible for pumping out adrenaline under acute stress in our fight-or-flight response. And you have a recipe for disaster as cortisol increases blood sugar. Candida doesn't care whether the increased sugar in your body is the result of eating a candy bar or another tough day at work. It will use the sugar as fuel to reproduce. And whether dysbiosis is a result of poor diet, stress, medications, or exposure to environmental toxins, once an imbalance occurs, the yeast will continue to multiply and progress into mild to severe health conditions. I'd like to take a moment to focus on the overuse of antibiotics, since this is such an enormous factor in Candida overgrowth, and one of the most common that I see in my practice. Antibiotics, as you likely know, are drugs that prevent and treat bacterial infections, such as strep throat, sexually transmitted diseases, acne, Lyme disease, pertussis, whooping cough, and food poisoning by E. coli or Salmonella. Penicillin, the first antibiotic, was discovered in 1929. By the early 1940s, doctors across the country were quick to write a prescription for this new miracle drug. While it must be acknowledged that antibiotics are life-saving medications, with great benefits, particularly in controlling epidemics related to food, infectious, and airborne bacteria, the overuse of these powerful drugs can actually make us sick. For example, many of my clients have been prescribed antibiotics when they have a cold or the flu. Even though, as I'd hope we all know by now, colds and flu are viral infections and not bacterial ones. Antibiotics are useless against viruses, yet many doctors prescribe them anyway. The Centers for Disease Control, CDC, has estimated that of the nearly 154 million courses of antibiotics prescribed every year, 30% may be unnecessary. The damage doesn't affect only your gut. This overprescribing has been linked to the rise of superbugs, pathogens that have adapted or mutated to resist antibiotic treatment, the most common being the MRSA, pronounced MRSA, Staphylococcus bacteria, often found in hospitals. Without newer, more effective antibiotics, an increasing world population makes these pathogens particularly hard to kill. This puts us all at risk of not being able to fight deadly infections when we need to. When you take an antibiotic, the antibacterial medicine kills both good and bad bacteria in your gastrointestinal tract. Antibiotics do not affect Candida albicans. So without friendly gut bacteria like Lactobacillus acidophilus and Bifidobacterium to keep the C. albicans population under control, the Candida multiplies. Yes, probiotics can help mitigate this concern, but by no means are they a complete answer to a complicated problem. The depletion of your microbiome, then, can have a devastating impact on your mycobiome, and thus, your health. In fact, it only takes one early life dose of antibiotics to start the fire. One. For example, if as a child you were given antibiotics for an ear infection or strep throat, this would be enough to trigger a rise in your yeast levels. Over time, subsequent lifestyle factors, such as poor diet or high stress levels, would continue feeding the yeast until you became symptomatic of the next infection or condition. The vast majority of my clients have been prescribed several doses of antibiotics at some point. Some were rightly prescribed the treatment to help combat a life-threatening disease, but many others were prescribed the drug to treat substantially less dangerous conditions, like acne. A report in the Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology found that the average duration for antibacterial treatment for acne was 331.3 days, with more than a third of those patients on antibiotics for a year or longer. The study's lead author suggested that if acne isn't controlled in 6 to 8 weeks, alternative treatments should be initiated. In fact, Jason, a client who suffered from persistent hay fever, told me at one point, "I was shocked when my wife made me check out your questionnaire for Candida, because, well, I thought it was a woman's disease. But you say if somebody scores over 90, he's got it. And I scored 250. I took antibiotics for acne off and on all through high school, for years. Perhaps it's no surprise that the greatest incidence of candidiasis can be found in North America and the industrialized countries of Europe, where we see the highest incidence of antibiotic use through both prescriptions and the consumption of animals treated with antibiotics. Antibiotics create conditions in the body that serve as a banquet for yeasts, and yeasts in turn serve as a banquet for viruses. When the delicate cohabitation of fungi, viruses, and bacteria is out of balance, viral infections can even create secondary bacterial infections. For example, the viral influenza can turn into bacterial pneumonia, which is in turn treated with more antibiotics, which creates more yeast, which attracts more viruses. And then you have a degenerative cycle that continues to perpetuate yeast growth. The vicious cycle of antibiotic overuse. Infection necessitates taking antibiotics, which wipes out friendly and unfriendly bacteria. Candida multiplies. Yeast and fungal mycotoxins take over the body as the yeast multiplies, which weakens the immune system, causing infection. To view a graphical representation of the cycle, please reference the enhanced PDF. Finally, while few of us have escaped multiple prescriptions for antibiotics, I'm willing to bet that none of us have escaped ingesting antibiotics through our food sources. An estimated 70% of antibiotics manufactured today are fed to cows and chickens to prevent infection caused by the poor housing conditions of industrial farming. Unless you are always eating antibiotic and hormone-free animal protein and dairy products, which means avoiding most restaurant meals, some dinner parties, and most packaged foods, you're taking more antibiotics than you realized, and thus have a higher likelihood of candida that's run amok. Mycotoxins, candida's toxic byproducts. Once candida is in an overgrowth state, the body has to deal with not only an overabundance of yeast, but also toxic fungal waste molecules, called mycotoxins, that are produced when yeast metabolizes glucose and other sugars through fermentation. The reason for the production of mycotoxins is not yet clearly understood, though we do know it's necessary for the growth or development of fungi. There are approximately 79 different mycotoxins associated with C. albicans, all of which attack by weakening your immune system, causing inflammation in the body, and destroying vital tissues and organs. These include acetaldehyde and gliotoxin, which I'll discuss more deeply in a bit, plus tyramine, candidotoxin, polysaccharide proteins, histamine, and glycoprotein toxin. Powerful mycotoxins can cause far-reaching breakdowns in your body. They're known to upset the communication of cell interactions. They can also disrupt RNA and DNA synthesis and damage and destroy neurons. They are carcinogenic and can induce ataxia, or a lack of coordination, and even convulsions. Since candida toxins commonly escape through the gut lining when it's become leaky and enter the bloodstream, the hope is that the liver can then detoxify them. However, if the liver's detoxification ability is impaired due to inadequate nutrition and toxic overload, the liver can't do its work as a filter, and these toxins will settle in other organs and tissues, such as the brain, nervous system, joints, and skin. Over time, other chronic diseases will then occur. There are two major toxins produced by C. albicans that especially concern me, because of their significant impact on immune strength. The first, acetaldehyde, is the same byproduct as that of alcohol metabolism, and is 6 times more potent than ethanol. It also causes cell mutation. Clients with high levels of acetaldehyde from candida can even test positive on breathalyzers. Normally, a healthy liver can convert acetaldehyde into a harmless substance. However, if there is an excess of acetaldehyde and the liver becomes oversaturated and can't keep up with demand, the toxin is released into the bloodstream, creating feelings of a hangover, brain fog, vertigo, and loss of equilibrium. And while the majority of acetaldehyde is processed in the liver, other tissues and organs can be involved and therefore affected, including the pancreas, kidneys, brain, and gastrointestinal tract. Acetaldehyde has several permanent and more destructive effects, particularly with neurological implications. For one, It alters the structure of red blood cells, leading to a severe form of anemia and even cancer. Acetaldehyde destroys dendrites, thread-like segments of neurons, nerve cells, that pick up information from neighboring neurons and transmit it to the nerve cell body. It can alter neurotransmitters and normal brain function, bringing about lethargy, depression, impaired memory, and brain fog. Acetaldehyde also creates a chronic deficiency of thiamine, or vitamin B1, which is critical for brain and nerve function, and for the production of acetylcholine, one of the brain's major neurotransmitters, the chemical messengers that carry signals between neurons and other cells in the body. Moreover, thiamine deficiency is often correlated to cognitive symptoms such as emotional apathy, depression, fatigue, insomnia, confusion, and permanent memory loss. Acetaldehyde also depletes niacin, or vitamin B3, which your cells need to burn fat and sugar for energy. And when your cells can't burn fat stores, you gain weight and feel lethargic. Niacin also plays an important role in the production of serotonin, a neurotransmitter that affects mood and sleep, as well as the production of a coenzyme that helps break down alcohol. Finally, acetaldehyde reduces certain enzymes in the body that help to produce energy in all cells, including brain cells. Other signs of acetaldehyde damage include slow reflexes, heightened irritability, decreased mental energy, increased panic and anxiety, decreased sensory acuity, increased tendency to alcohol and sugar, decreased sex drive, and increased PMS and breast swelling and tenderness. Gliotoxin, our second mycotoxin of concern, deactivates important enzymes that move toxins through the body and causes DNA changes in the white blood cells, suppressing the immune system. Both of these consequences mean that your body is less able to detox efficiently, and the liver recirculates toxic metabolites. As fungus and mycotoxins continue to weaken your immune system, more infections arise, and you end up at the doctor's office again, being prescribed more antibiotics that perpetuate the vicious cycle. Mycotoxins and the mucous membrane. One of the most remarkable characterizations of Candida overgrowth is that it can factor into countless diseases. It doesn't discriminate against any body system. They're all up for grabs. This is because, while C. albicans's mycotoxins primarily target nerves and muscles, they can just as well attack any and every tissue or organ, including the skin, depending on certain factors, such as your body's genetic predisposition and your dietary and lifestyle habits. And they all reach their destinations in the same way. To better understand how Candida can make certain parts of your body sick, think of your body as having two layers of protection that keep out foreign invaders: your outside skin and your inside skin, your mucous membranes. Yeast must pass through these to do its damage. Your mucous membranes begin in your nasal passages and run all the way down to your rectum, affecting the digestive, reproductive, and respiratory systems. This tissue is the same from top to bottom, and if it becomes inflamed or irritated, the membranes become more porous, allowing foreign invaders to enter the bloodstream. This can compromise organs and immune function. In the journal Infection and Immunity, authors Michael J. Kennedy and Paul A. Voles insist that the passage of viable Candida albicans through the gastrointestinal, GI, mucosa into the bloodstream is believed to be an important mechanism leading to systemic candidiasis. Once an invasion takes place, C. albicans and its mycotoxins accumulate in the body, causing cellular disruption within the immune system and your organs and tissues. Mycotoxins so severely debilitate the body that, as Kennedy and Voles go on to say, victims could become easy prey for far more serious diseases, including immune deficiency syndrome, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, colitis, and schizophrenia. Then, on a personal level, your own genetic makeup includes risk factors for hereditary disease, your general state of health,